Siren Radio.
I just had a slight feeling there that away at Ajax was actually giving our newscaster and newsreader there just a teeny, teeny bit of trouble. You know, that's why we had that little pause. Away at Ajax. Maybe he was just worried. Maybe he was just confused. I don't know. Kira Allsbrook is in the studio. Hey ho. And Gabriella, would you like to not go away at Ajax, which is, of course, a different line entirely, but actually provide us with the weather for Lincoln, England from Gibraltar, or as we like to refer to it, Gabriella Land?
Okay, so the weather from Gabriella Land to Lincoln is highs of 12 degrees centigrade, lows of 6 degrees centigrade, and it's a gentle, breezy day with light rain showers.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Good morning, Kira Allsbrook.
Hello. It's really early for me.
I know. I mean, it's like shockingly early.
I don't come out of hibernation until at least 12 o'clock every day, if I can.
Well, you've made it. You're here. You can actually sort of be the mentor for Alex Bilton, also a second year at the University of Lincoln. But, of course, you know, because you've co-hosted The Joys of From Mountains to Molecules together.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about that show, but
no.
still.
I still don't. You know, you put the thing out there. I believe, Gabriella, it's something to do with respect to science and so on. Anyway, Gabriella.
Sounded like it.
Yeah, From Mountains to Molecules, clues in the name. Have you coped with power cuts and power outages in Gabriella Land?
I just counted how many, because they always tweet whenever there's a power cut, so the electricity authority will tweet it. But Gibraltar's just finished its new power station, so that's just finishing construction. It's a liquid natural gas power station. I don't know exactly what that means, but apparently it's meant to be very good.
Mm.
So we're swapping from our old power station to our current one.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had, this is a second power cut this month, three in September, another one's in August. And historically, we've always had power cuts. So this is just something that I can always remember growing up, that it's not so regularly that maybe it happens like twice in a day and then it doesn't happen for like 3 months. But I remember when I went to the UK and I was studying in Lincoln, we had one power cut in 3 years. And it was as if, like,
it's the end of the world.
Armageddon. Yeah, and absolutely. I was like, guys, just put on a candle or, I don't know, put on
How
your
How can we charge our mobile phones if there's a power cut? No!
Sorry. Yeah. But I used to remember always as a kid when I was little, power cuts, just running to get candles and sitting down in the kitchen table and waiting it out with my parents. So now at least we have phones and 3G and torches, you know?
Wow.
So, and the power cuts have been, you know, during the day, which has been nice, not at night, so you can actually see and you can, you know, sometimes there's been times where you can't cook your dinner.
Oh.
And what do you do?
Use a candle.
Yeah, use a candle or make a salad.
Of course.
Power cuts aren't too bad. Sometimes they're okay. It's at least our work has a generator, so we continue working.
Well, that's all we need.
Even with a power cut.
Let's do a straw poll. Kira, in the joys of Derbyshire, power cuts, is that something you've never experienced? Or is it a case of, what do you mean? I've got Scottish blood in me. In Scotland, we always have power cuts.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think in my entire lifetime, I've witnessed, about five or six power cuts, and they're a nightmare.
Wow.
Complete nightmare.
Oh, my God. That's me, like, in 3 months.
Exactly.
Good luck.
But we're hopefully going to, with this new power station, hopefully that shouldn't happen unless builders tend to dig through cables and things. So sometimes it's not the power station's fault, it's the construction worker
slightly
cutting
the
cable.
Slightly worried about the medical school that's being built, but never mind, you know, they look as though they've got it all under control. What about yourself, Alex? Power cuts?
Power cuts, yes. So I've experienced a few in my time.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, back in Sheffield. We've always got the emergency candles ready.
Because you can always burn the house down then on that basis.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Candles,
yeah.
So why use torches? It's very critical. And what does the rest of the day have in store for your good self? Are you still recovering from the general election, the election you had last week, Gabriella?
I think it's now back. We're getting back to normal. So we had the election in the government that we had before was re-elected, so it means that there hasn't been much of a change. It was all just, you know, back on the same. So, but really interesting general election we had. So we have our, we've had a cabinet reshuffle. So our first ever woman Minister for Justice, and also woman Minister for Civil Contingencies. So that's interesting.
Have they given
first ever minister that's of Indian descent? So, you know.
And I take it they've given you due acknowledgement of the change of name to Gabriella Land, in terms of, obviously, that's the part of the Queen's speech, which obviously needs to be produced as well.
Yeah, I'll float that next time I see them.
I think so.
Yeah.
It starts here, and that's the way we actually develop the whole source system. Who would you like to have a brief chat with? Would it be Alex Bilton, or would it be Kira Allsbrook? It's entirely up to yourself, Gabriella. You've got 3.5 minutes.
Kira, tell me what you're up to. I don't really know too much about you, so tell me about what you're...
I'm a very interesting, weird person. Probably the weirdest person you'll ever meet, to be fair. what would you like to know?
Good question, Kira. Response, like.
Yeah, tell me about your... Well, what are you studying? Are you studying journalism? Are you studying...
I'm studying public relations and communications at the minute. I'm in my second year. It's very different to how I imagined it. Like, first year was more quite laid back, in a way. Not a lot of reading, and now it's, like,
full
bombarded with all these materials. But I like it so far. I mean, I specifically like, I think at the minute, event management, which, if Alex is okay with it later on, I would like to... promote slightly,
of course,
if I can.
Of course. Why not? The fact it's run by the business school is an error.
Exactly.
So
I mean,
it's part of the link.
That's fun. That's fun. It's really fun. I don't really know what else to say.
So you've got an event going on?
Yeah, it's on the 27th of November, and it's basically the Lincoln Eco Workshop. And it's a guide to become a more sustainable student. So me and my team are basically into little subgroups. So I'm doing the PR and marketing side, and some others are doing operations and etc. and finance. But the aim is to have, I think, two guest speakers. One of them's Amanda Goss, and she's like a creative, art maker kind of thing. She turns like newspapers into pencils, and she always recycles all the materials and makes use for them again. And then our other one is, I think, Martin Elswell or something like that. He's part of the business school, and I think he teaches event management, but also he's very like active against climate change and, you know, environmental like issues and stuff. So it's going to be all good.
It's going to be wonderful. And when's it happening?
27th of November,
literally 22 days after Chris Packham has also delivered a session on the 5th of November.
Yeah,
so there we are. The University of Lincoln, clearly, actually, just your legacy, Gabriella, has kind of just stood us all in good stead from that point of view, which is wondrous in so many ways.
Legacy at the uni, I don't know what I've left of anything.
just the fact that the resonations of, you know, the Gabriella Peralta once sat here, this is what I use with the students in the level two and level one classes. She used to sit over there as well, and there's usually hushed tones actually mentioned, and due reverence, obviously. Kira, last two questions for Gabriella Peralta, please.
Jesus Christ, I forgot.
For people who are concerned by that sort of little religious sort of blasphemy there, don't worry, we apologise completely from that point of view.
Sorry, my brain is screwed.
That's fine. Excellent.
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Hopefully next week.
Yes, see you soon.
That's the important thing, you see. Nice. Obviously, the Lord is always amongst us.
Since I've seen such stark despair.
it is. It's going to be all right, Meghan. It's going to be all right, Harry. Honestly, maybe there are just three people in the marriage. There's Meghan, there's Harry, and maybe there's ITV as well. Oh, well. Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome back to the production. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine.
You sound like you're a bit... have you got a slight cold there, Richard?
Yes, possibly. Just seem to have picked something up.
Richard, I've told you about the
broadcast that you were talking about, the documentary, mm-hmm. I mean, one just has to say there is going to be a lot of fallout over it, because, quite frankly, if you're abroad, you should be representing the government, the Queen and country, not yourself. And the timing of what had been a brilliant trip, you know, a brilliant trip.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you could actually turn around and say, that's what happens when you bring an American into the royal family. You know, it happened in the 1930s. It looks as though it could be happening again. But anyway.
It didn't happen in the 1930s. May I remind you what actually happened? The king abdicated so he could marry Mrs. Simpson. The royal family didn't have Mrs. Simpson. That's they wouldn't, true. In fact, the Dominion Prime Minister...
Well, then there we are, you see. It was an attempt to bring an American in. Never mind. We're not anti-American here for obvious reasons. We love them across the ocean, the old colonies. I must introduce you, though, to two fine folk in the studio. You've spoken to one of them before when she was a first year. That's Kira Olsbrook.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Well, hello, Kira. We're going to be discussing another Kira.
Yeah, you see why we actually had to set this whole thing up, basically. And Miss Knightley wasn't available. She said, bring in Miss Olsbrook. She'll be a nice double from that point of view, which is all good. And Alex Bilton is with us as well. Alex, who actually sort of said, he's famous as Richard Fitzwilliams. He does stuff on the news and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good to see. Yes, well, most kind.
Yeah, I noticed you were hanging out with Mr. Suchet as well recently in your Facebook scenarios and update, Richard. That's very nice.
No, but I mean, David, this was a launch of Behind the Lens. David's grandfather, Jimmy Jarche, was a well-known Fleet Street photographer, and this was the launch last night. David Suchet he's been a friend for many years, and also he's one of the finest actors, and having followed him in so many roles, from Salieri in Amadeus to most recently the Arthur Miller play The Price, I mean, he really is a great actor, a remarkable human being.
Yes, but
This was fascinating because these were his photographs.
But Richard,
they're very much following in the footsteps of his grandfather.
Yeah, but can he actually read the news as well as his brother? I mean, this is the classic line, you know. I mean,
Suchet was also there.
Yeah, but again, can he take photographs as well as his brother, or is it just a case of a bit like William and Harry? They just get on, and they're always there for each other because they're brothers.
Yes, but the problem with bearing your soul in a documentary of the sort. Firstly, during the week when the Cambridges were in Pakistan, as you know, and the royal tour, I mean, quite frankly, there were two trails. One was Harry saying that every time he sees the camera, a click, a flash, it reminds him of the tragic end of his mother. And, of course, it's his mother who's haunting him. I mean, this is... partly the trip when he went to Angola, for example, he quite literally followed in Diana's footsteps when she so brilliantly campaigned against landmines. But the facts also are that he appears to be extremely concerned that what happened to his mother could in some form happen to Meghan, and it is this is the
well,
fact
then the solution
that
is quite simple. Don't hang around with open heart surgeons, and don't actually sort of go under a parish bypass or underpass at speed. You know, avoid those things, and all will be well.
No, well, I have to say, I mean, one of the reasons this documentary is serious is that you did have soul bearing that implied in Meghan's case that, you know, she didn't have people to talk to or say okay, who would ask her if she was okay, and you know, she wasn't very flattering about the stiff upper lip and so forth. The problem was, firstly, the timing, which they should not have detracted from the enormous and excellent publicity the Cambridges were getting when they were in Pakistan, and secondly, it really, really isn't wise to do when you're highly stressed, and Meghan said she was coping from day to day. Harry was saying, obviously, that you know he too felt the pressure because some of his mental issues had been coming back.
Okay.
What you should not do is then launch a series of legal. You shouldn't be launching legal action against newspapers, which first is going to increase negativity, which is, well, even if you win the cases.
Okay.
And secondly, what you shouldn't be doing is doing documentaries of the sort.
Sage advice. Let's just test out the younger generation. First of all, Alex Bilton, are you really bothered at all, or is it just a case of, look, just let them get on with this whole thing? We don't care. If Megan's feeling that she's sort of stressed about the whole thing, it doesn't really matter. I'm not on iota interested in that whole sequence.
If they want to just get on with it, then they can, yeah.
Oh, okay, Kira?
They
don't care, Richard, you see, that's it. You know, they just don't
care. I do. It's just, it's a very open question. I don't want to say to the royal family, oh, you do this, and that's what you do. I mean, it's up to them at the end of the day. They're a young couple. They've just had a new baby. You know, they're not
just any young couple.
Well,
they're part of the Windsor Firm.
You know, well, let's say they want to be ordinary, don't they?
They can be.
But the problem is, can you? And also, I mean, these are the questions asked. Do they want to continue as senior members of the royal family?
Exactly.
Where do they want to be based?
Yeah, with all the privileges that come with that.
One of the problems is if they were based abroad, you know, the security costs would be enormous, taxpayers' contribution to Frogmore. They've got 6 weeks' leave that they're going to take, and hopefully they'll sort things out because, you know, are they receiving advice? Well, certainly if they're receiving advice, it's bad advice, and if they're receiving advice that's different, they're not taking it.
Richard, can I make a suggestion? A possible job swap with Boris and Carrie. You know, Boris and Carrie could leave 10 Downing Street and actually take on the role of Prince Harry and Meghan, and then probably there'd be much more popularity in politics as well. Just a thought there.
Why, Alex, a Daniel come to judgment, another Daniel.
Yeah, well, anyway, back in the day when a gift of tennis balls were actually provided to Britain from the Dauphin of France, proving that there were even Brexit problems back in that time, I don't think even they thought that our Pats would actually be involved with the King. There's your cue, Richard. Time for the King, on Netflix, no less.
Time for the King, and also, I think a very good example here, the greatness of Shakespeare. His work is relevant for me and for all of us, for all of time. It can be performed in any way, and one of the reasons that I think people would enjoy The King is that it is, like Harry and Meghan's messages are supposed to be, aimed at millennials. It's specifically aimed at a younger generation, and it's based on the Henriade. That's Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2, and Henry V, in which the character of Henry V, played by Timothée Chalamet, appears. So we see him first as a companion of the debauched Sir John Falstaff, played by Joel Edgerton. But nonetheless, he's still brave enough to take on his father's enemies in single combat, so he obviously has potential. When his father dies, appalled by assassins who are sent to the French to murder him, and mocked by the single tennis ball, Alex, I have to say, just one sent as a gift by the
Dauphin. Yeah, you see, it was tennis balls, my liege. Tennis balls,
no,
my liege.
No, it's a tennis ball.
No.
Just one. We have to be careful. Yeah.
Original play, tennis balls, my liege. In which case the line was, we are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His presence and your pains we thank you for.
Ah, very good, very good. And the Dauphin is played by Robert Pattinson, who plays him as a psychopath, which he may have been, but nonetheless, it isn't a particularly good performance. And then Robert Pattinson isn't, in my view, a particularly good actor. But anyway, he revives England's ancient claim to France, crosses the Channel with his army, lays siege to Harfleur very spectacularly, and my goodness, then
once
we have
more into the breach, dear Richard, once more.
Into the breach, indeed. Then forming a bond that unites the two kingdoms, he marries Catherine, the daughter of the King of France. I mean, one thing I have to say about this movie, which it is impressive, is the way it uses CGI. I mean, it looks splendid. The Siege of Harfleur is quite a show, Kenneth Branagh, 1989, had about half a dozen extras. That's all he could afford. And,
yeah, about the same as Laurence Olivier had to do back when he was doing it as a propaganda piece back in 1940, but there we are.
Absolutely. He just had to stick to the stage, apart from the actual... Well, Agincourt was actually a ballet in the 1945 film. I mean, it's a marvellously spectacular one. You could say it's CGI, like with all those arrows, you remember, descending onto the French horsemen. But, I mean, this wasn't... you don't see any blood. So the point about the Olivier film was it was made on the eve of D-Day and the French landing, so of course it was patriotic. Mm. And Branagh was a thoughtful piece and the most impressive.
And this is possibly on the eve of Brexit, so, you know, it could be patriotic or not, who knows?
Well, I think, yeah, you find, I mean, no spoilers from me, but they have a lot of fun with the plots. And also, you can see what warfare really was like to some extent anyway in that time. I mean, it's quite interesting. Timothée Chalamet, it's a very good performance as Henry V. He's a libertine, but he's a brave warrior. He's a cautious and adventurous monarch with a ruthless streak. And it's essential in a pretty violent Machiavellian age that you can usually combine all that. I mean, interestingly, Joel Edgerton as Falstaff, I mean, this is fun. I always remember my dad used to say Shakespeare had been very unkind to Falstaff because he was in reality a brave knight. Well, in this case, you might find Falstaff joins the Menagincourt. Indeed,
he's been rehabilitated, has he? It's a rehabilitation for Falstaff.
Yes, he has, indeed. Oh, he has.
And we understand.
You're going to put him in a basket like the Merry Wives of Windsor. You are not going to find that. You're going to find that, well, it's Falstaff who says, and wait for it, if it rains, fight at Agincourt.
Brilliant.
And they do. It does, you see, and then they win. But, I mean, the Agincourt, the battle, is most impressively staged. One must say that. Sean Harris is the influential William Gascoigne. He's very in favour of war. I wonder why that is. Robert Pattinson overacts as the doper. He's just simply silly. And Lily Rose Depp is Catherine of France. Women have very much...
Yeah, it's a minor. It's a minor role. Let's face it. Shakespeare wasn't much into woke culture, so, you know, it's the bottom
line. Well,
there.
You see this movie in your... I mean, there's a lot to enjoy here. It's an Australian-American movie, but then that's what we need to... Well, they need the Australians and the Americans to help us with Brexit, you see.
And we understand him well, how he comes o'er us in our wilder days. We never valued this poor seat of England, and therefore giving hence did give our throne to Barbara's licence. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Let us move on to find out whether, Kira, will you be checking out The King?
I think I will, actually, because I do like my historical non-fiction and the period dramas and stuff.
Excellent. So. And Alex Bilson, will you be seeking it out?
Yeah, I might give it a watch. I'm more of a sort of Mad Men person, though. I like Mad Men and Friends.
Good.
Yeah,
Friends.
A lot of Mad Men, obviously, in The King, but not necessarily advertising people from Madison Avenue. Still, maybe it's the campaign for the movie. Mm. Well,
you have to say one thing about The King is it is a marvellously inventive. If sometimes rather silly, I mean, I'm not saying it all works, it's not very subtle, but it is aimed at the younger audience, and it is, put it mildly, it's great fun. I mean, it is. Why not? Why can't Shakespeare be fun? It's a good example.
Why not, indeed? She risked everything to stop an unjust war. Her government called her a traitor. And when you start thinking about Catherine Gunn and who could possibly actually play Catherine Gunn, a British intelligence specialist whose job involves routine handling of classified information, then clearly it needs to be Keira Knightley, obviously. And I'm sure that you'll be singing her praises once again, Richard, in the awesome Official Secrets.
Well, Official Secrets, I mean, the one thing about it is it's a very timely film at the moment. We know what's going on in Parliament. We also know all sorts of manner of, shall we say, ambiguities of behaviour occurring. I mean, this is from director Gavin Hood, who made Sotsi, a brilliant film set in Johannesburg, and he's South African. I met him fleetingly. In fact, I saw this film at the London Film Festival, and yes, it is enjoyable. It is very timely. In 2003, the Security Service, as a specialist, Catherine Gunn, played by Keira Knightley, she receives a memo from the National Security Agency, that's America, from Frank Kozer, its regional targets chief, And this is when the Americans are enlisting Britain's help in collecting compromising information on the United Nations Security Council members and in the hope of blackmailing them into voting in favor of the invasion of Iraq. So what should she do? Should she stand by and watch a war with 2 million on the streets protesting that it's unjust? She defies, I mean, she...
Is it a weapons of mass destruction thing, Richard? Are they
there? Oh, yeah, it's... The weapons of mass destruction, of course, was part of the reason, which was proven later to be false, that Britain went to war. This was an aspect of it. And she was a translator. She has the email. She gives it to a friend who supports the anti-war movement. It appears in The Guardian. She's arrested. She spends a night in police custody. 8 months later, she is charged with breaking the Official Secrets Act. What happens? Do you remember?
Well, let's face it, we had the war after all, didn't we? I mean, that's the bottom
line. Oh, well, we did indeed, but it's... I mean, Keira is... Well, does the role require a great deal of depth? No, it doesn't. Can Keira produce it? Well, on occasion she can, but certainly on some occasions, whether it's in The Duchess or Anna Karenina, she can't. I mean, it does vary. I mean, she, shall we say, is adequate in the role. I mean, there's a problem with this film. It's certainly interesting. Matthew Good plays Peter Beaumont, who's the journalist from The Observer. Roger Fiennes plays Ben Emerson, who represented Gunn in court. And, I mean, what we... Oh, sorry, Ralph Fiennes. What we have here is a timely, well enough made movie. But there is a difficulty. There are lots of scenes of rather grim-looking characters in rather darkened rooms. There isn't the drama somehow that there might be, but it's a film that should be made, because I have to be frank, I asked you about whether you remembered about Gunn, because I didn't. Because the war occurred so soon after this happened, I'd actually forgotten, which is a
Richard,
shameful
as we were aware, the Prime Minister at the time, Tony Blair, said we were literally within 30 seconds of being struck at any time by those
45
weapons.
Minutes?
Well, a matter of seconds, that's right. A little less than 3,000 seconds.
This particular, the 45 minutes dossier, which talked of 45 minutes and how that precisely could be justified.
It's the same kind of truth that led £350 million per day to be going to the NHS as opposed to Brussels. That was used as well. You tell the lies, you get into politics. Matt Smith is also in the movie, so you've got the Doctor as Martin Bright. That's worth mentioning, as well as Rhys Ifans.
Rhys Ifans is absolutely hilarious. He plays a journalist who's gone... Well, he goes to America to investigate, and I mean, I couldn't stop laughing at him because he plays a...
He channels his inner Notting Hill performance. Let's just check out with Alex Bilton in the studio. What would you make of Official Secrets? Of course, you were in the kindergarten when this whole thing was actually happening back in 2003.
Yes, it looks like quite an interesting film, to be honest. Probably going to go and watch it, maybe. I'll wait until it comes on, too.
A wonderful community engagement kind of movie. Keira, what are your thoughts on Official Secrets? Will you be checking it out?
Possibly.
Even for your namesake, Keira Knightley.
Yeah, you know, no, I do like Keira Knightley, but I prefer her in Love Actually. The rom-com side of things.
Bend It Like Beckham.
To be fair. I don't think she's a very... She can't play very serious characters.
She
well,
can't
I
play
think.
Very serious
I mean,
characters.
She
like Anna Karenina.
Yeah, but... I don't like Anna Karenina. I watched I Can Get Into It.
No.
I just didn't...
Point, oh well, never mind. Sometimes these shocking things come around, Richard, and what the hey, never mind. At least the good thing is she's now being able to pick up the roles that otherwise would possibly not been offered to Meghan Markle, because for obvious reasons she's not going to be on the scene these days.
One of the problems, you know, with seeing Matt Smith, I mean, he plays Martin Bright, who wrote the original story. I kept thinking of the Duke of Edinburgh. Now, there's just something about him,
who also is the Doctor, you know, exactly. All he needs is the TARDIS of the Duke of Edinburgh, and suddenly we've come full circle. Richard, it has been fantastic as ever. Some interesting perceptive views, as we knew there would be on the ITV Royal interview. We won't be hearing the last of that, I'm sure.
I don't think we will be, but I think it was very, very ill-advised of them to do it.
Oh, there we are. And then, of course, The King, kind of all right. But I suppose both middling movies, really. I mean, no real thumbs up, Richard, but then not really thumbs down either, I wouldn't have thought.
No, I was thumbs up, because it's a new take in Henry V and the Henriad, the other two plays too, and also it's imaginative, and it's colourful. It was thumbs up. I was very much thumbs up. I did say it was subtle, and it was occasionally silly. It is, but on the other hand, go and see it, and it's 2 hours, 20 minutes, and I was gripped. I'd recommend it.
I mean, gripped in the same way as, shall we say, Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker was when he actually took out Robert De Niro. What aspect of that was? Woof. Woof.
What a thing. You can't talk about things like that.
I thought I'd just shameful.
I have to protest.
24 minutes to 9 o'clock. Ian Lennox up next. And we still actually will be getting a reprise of something which actually almost shut our switchboards down with excitement last night. Of course, Ukrainian Cowboy. Hold the press. We haven't asked you those last two questions, Richard. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link?
I have indeed.
Are you coming back next week?
I am.
Splendid. Happiness all the way. Rainbow and marmalade, which I believe is what you're spreading on your toast, Ian, because you bring a rainbow of happiness in a Tyneside way to the world. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent.
How are you?
Oh, yeah, okay, all things considered, you know. 5-1 was a quite acceptable result, I think, and obviously we just hope that Tottenham will actually do the business against Liverpool, much as obviously Ole Gunnar Solskjaer managed to do that over the weekend. So happy days from that point of view. Sorry about your Chelsea experience, but, you know...
Oh, when you lost by one goal, didn't miss it.
Well, exactly, that's right. However, the operative word was Newcastle United did not win. However, that's by the by, because I suspect in the studio nobody really cares these. I mean, Kira, are you a football fan at all?
I used to support Nottingham Forest.
Right.
Oh, right.
I used to go to... My dad used to be a season ticket holder.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to... I got dragged to all of the games. But no, I actually kind of liked it. I kind of enjoyed the atmosphere.
You can take legal action now against your father if
I
you...
I will do. But that would go down really well.
That's okay. And we also have Alex Bilton, originally from which part is it?
Sheffield.
Yes, yeah,
Sheffield United supporter. Very happy about the result against Arsenal.
Yes,
yes, I was in the pub celebrating, of course.
A Blades man through and through from that point of view. So there we are. And probably the odds are Sheffield United will finish substantially higher than Newcastle United this season.
Well, and Watford by the look of it.
We'll see what'll do, Alex.
Now, you say that, Ian, but I know secretly you believe that all's well with the world. Otherwise, how could you possibly, you know, share a... I mean, look at this video. Look at that. Is that not an R video there? I mean, it's little kittens there that have been put together playing...
Oh, yes. It's funny, wasn't it? The Tupperware party.
Well, I'm just... I mean, for me, I was thinking, is this a case of these are live kittens that you're providing for people's lunches? You know, is that the sort of line? You know, is this some sort of strange, crazed, almost feline, cannibalistic sort of approach that you put together here? But I see they're just having a Tupperware party. That's the key thing. And no kittens were harmed in any way, shape or form, presumably, in the making of that particular video. Yeah, exactly. But mind you, if you just packed one down, this squashed kitty for lunch, which is not going to be good at all, really. Anyway, moving on. Ian, we normally have a pre-see and a reprise of the Tessa Start tune of the week. And last night, as I said, it created a whole range of interesting comments and lines on a number of sort of bases. Once heard, probably never forgotten, has to be said. Are you ready for Ukrainian cowboy?
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, my thoughts exactly. Are you ready for it, Ian?
Yes, I'm sitting down.
Okay. Pay particular attention to the lyrics. I think you'll find them quite fascinating.
Now, I know, Ian, secretly you've always wished that you could coin a term such as there's a hole in my heart as big as Russia, or maybe Prussia. Genius. I mean, that was actually singularly responsible for Robin Pearce tipping Tessa Snart into becoming the most valuable contributor to the Midweek Drive last night. Josie Cotton was the name of the artist. The tune, of course, a Ukrainian cowboy. Or if you're challenging your inner Eastern European scenario, Ukrainian cowboy, da, tovarish.
Ah, right.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Couple of days ago, I've got three sisters and constantly I'm being nagged every day.
Of course.
And recently, with the youngest, who's the worst, told me I should wear my hearing aid more often.
Huh?
And she's just been proved correct because I
could not hear a word.
I can't disseminate any of the words.
None of the lyrics went through that.
Not a word.
Yeah.
I like the general treatment of it, but unfortunately, I cannot distinguish the telephone,
of course,
the lyrics against the background music.
And that, Josie Cotton, is one of the critical aspects in terms of where we actually invite Ian to become one of our judges, because, of course, we do feed it down a relatively substandard fibre optic cable line from Lincoln to Tyneside. And sometimes it doesn't work. But take it from me, when you listen back to the podcast, there's a hole in my heart as big as Russia, or maybe Prussia.
Well, Alex, if they ever invent subtitles for radio, I should be an enthusiastic supporter.
Yeah. We will go with it, Ian. We will go with that. That's important. Apparently, according to Tessa, she channels her inner Joan Jett from Joan Jett and the Black Hearts in terms of the whole sequence. Another little classic, of course, being Josie Cotton with Johnny, Are You Queer? Which is amazing. There's a little line that sort of comes across there. So it just goes to show the sort of wondrousness that Josie Cotton... In fact, I think she's already setting herself up as being a star guest for the Monday Breakfast Show with Alex Bilton when he sort of sets that whole thing through. Who knows? It's just a thought there.
Absolutely.
You know? I just put it out there. I mean, you might like to play Ukrainian cowboy as your theme. You know, ride in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got anything else on that basis, we'll take it through. Ian, who would you like to speak to? Because you haven't spoken to Kira for probably well over a year, because she's not a morning person, really.
Not that long.
Oh, is it not?
I don't know, maybe. No, it's about 6 months.
Let's go 6 months, it sounds
better. Okay, 6 months.
You've
never spoken... Sorry,
I haven't spoken to whom?
Kira Allsbrook.
Doesn't even...
Hello.
Recognise
me.
Turn the hearing aid up, Ian.
I'll speak to Kira, but you'll have to speak up.
Hello, exactly. What?
Hello, Ian.
All right, Pat's love.
Where are we? I've told you, Ian, you don't need... You can have technological things now, which actually have, you know, microphones built into the whole thing. You don't have to have that ear trumpet, Ian. You know, that ear trumpet.
Put the phone in your good ear, so I haven't got a good ear.
Hear, as they'd say in the House of Commons. Hear. Order, order.
Well, I can listen to him. Yeah, I can hear Burko, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there we are. All we need is for Kira to channel her inner John Burko, and all will be well with the world.
Please, the DJ, I'd be all right. Well, I wouldn't be, but I could hear what he said anyway.
Please.
Anyway, go on. Yeah.
So, is it Kira Allsbrook, or would you like to speak to Alex Bilton, who's making his debut on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
I mean, personally, I think Alex, by all means, I think.
Okay.
No, I think I'll speak to Kira because I haven't seen her for a while.
Exactly. You can't fight your popularity,
the
Kira.
The next time Castle win, I'll speak to somebody else, okay?
Exactly. It's the Sheffield United thing that did for Alex Bilton. Kira is ready for your questions, Ian. Go.
Oh, right. What are you studying, Kira?
Public relations and communications in my second year, so it's going well, I hope.
It starts to get a bit, when I used to teach media studies at uni when I gave up television, and I only did the first years, and that was a nice year. The second year you started to work, I think, is that right?
Yeah, so second year, first year, you know, you can slack a little,
you handle
I guess.
The levels.
Second year it's really cramped and, you know, you're constantly working, your butt off most of the time. Third year, you don't get a break. You're just doing your dissertation and that's it.
But is it in the second year really you find out where the course is for you? Because
yes.
The first year is so gentle and you have a good time.
The first year is really subtle with like the modules and stuff and it's kind of like a little taster, you know, into the whole course. And then the second year you learn more about things that you picked up in the first year, and it kind of develops into something quite big and confusing. And
have you got an end goal? I mean, have you got a distinct idea what you want to do when you get your degree?
Yes, I would. Ideally, I have two companies that I'd really like to work for, but I can't see it happening. I'd like to either go and do public relations or even event management for historic royal palaces down in London. I love the history. I love all of their properties, and it would be amazing to do. Or Disney, but Disney is very far fetched. so I'm not sure about that.
The stories they deal with. You know?
I know. Okay, just be honest.
I'm personally looking forward to Frozen 2. You know, I think it's going to be my movie of the year.
I don't know.
It's certainly going to be better than the Joker. But there we are.
The Joker's amazing. Yeah. You can't compare the Joker to Disney. That's just dark.
Kira, let it go. All right, let it go.
I used to interview people that worked in libraries, and especially in the social history sections and things like that. They lived among old photographs and stuff, and people who lived in museums as well. They used to reckon that the stuff that was below stairs in the museum were more interesting than the stuff that was on top, because it's just about seven times more exhibits downstairs than you ever saw or rarely saw. But the thing that impressed me about them as a collective was that they were just so involved in their job, and I don't know if they got paid all that well. Well, they got paid quite well, I suppose. But the thing was, they were content with what they did because they were engaged by it. And it sounds to me, if you've got a job in a historical context, you would be the same.
Yeah, I think if you have the passion for it, you know, you can do it. It doesn't really... Because, I mean, a lot of historical work experience or, you know, doing PR for them or anything, it's quite... A lot of it is voluntary-based.
Right. Have you done much work experience?
Yeah, I have. I've done a film festival for the past 5 years back in Beeston. So it's like a little international one for local... Well, not local, but for aspiring filmmakers. I've done organised events. I've tried to think of everything I've done. I've done separate things for
different
people.
You've done the Lincoln Book Festival.
Yeah, I've done the Lincoln Book Festival. I've done a lot of stuff for Siren, and I've done some projects for Signet.
And you've got this niche on the radio as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Is this one? The reason I'm asking is that if you think about it, you're competing against your fellow students for jobs eventually.
Yes, exactly.
Kills them all! Sorry, it's the joke.
One of the
I
things that will help you is if when you go to an interview, if they see that you've got some initiative and you've done stuff like
exactly.
that, you've done. So keep on doing that.
Thank you.
And Ian Lennox knows of what he speaks.
He does.
That's why he doesn't.
He's a wise man.
That's
why. Not many people say that.
that's why he doesn't speak to Sheffield United supporters.
Never any Man City supporters.
Oh, listen, I'm just. These things happen, Ian. You know, the fact of the matter is, as you know, I've been City till
I die. Don't confuse me with flattery.
There you go. So, as we progress onwards to the next little line, have you had your flu jab this year, Ian Lennox?
No, I never do. I never do have a flu jab. That's another thing I get told off about from three daughters and three sisters.
Exactly. It's not going to help nudge theory if we're sort of working through that. We'll be speaking to pharmacist Mac Din. I know, Mac Din, back with us to talk about the importance of flu jabs after the news. We've also got Jason Bradbury on how you should be considering technology to help you fulfill your childhood ambitions. We've also got William Higham and Stephen Bowden discussing the whole notion of how Londoners in particular, well, who cares really? No, Londoners and possibly everybody will eventually be suffering in the workplace. With new research finding that over 90% of office workers who suffer health issues because of their work environment admit that these aches and pains make their job more difficult. There's a headline for you, Ian. I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, suffering from health issues make your job more difficult.
Wow.
I know.
When I was working, we had...
Cutting edge.
When I started work, we had this nicotine-stained ceiling.
Exactly. That's it. And did it do you any harm whatsoever? Okay, it didn't do your hearing much good, but at the end of the day, you know, we carry on.
Well, I contributed to most of them.
Steady, Ian. We can't endorse anything on this particular product. Let's ease away from that. I'm going to bring in Alex Wilton here because, let's face it, somebody has to. Would you like to deliver for the first time those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please, without any kind of incarnations of the Son of God, please?
I'll try and remember what you guys say. It's, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic connection with us today?
I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us in the near future?
I hope so.
Brilliant.
That's all we need. Ian, prediction for England against New Zealand in the Rugby World Cup?
Oh, I don't know. I got most of them right, you know.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. That did cross my mind.
I really don't know. I think New Zealand are the best team in the competition.
Yeah.
But England have got a fantastic defence and they play a certain way. If their technical kicking is improves a little bit.
It's fairly critical.
My heart says England, but my head says New Zealand.
It'll be interesting. Will you be watching it with Arthur McKenzie?
Not with Arthur, no. I haven't seen Arthur for a while. I've just used on the phone occasionally.
Right. And here was thinking you would be getting together like two peas in a proverbial Geordie pod to actually sort of be checking out the Rugby World Cup, but obviously not. Never mind.
No, I watch it alone. Well, my son comes on occasionally, but they all know much more about rugby than I do. It's a bit embarrassing, really. I just sort of shout enthusiastically at the television.
And that's the best way forward, really, particularly if you haven't got your hearing aid. Anyway, Ian, take care.
I must introduce you to my sisters,
yes. Well, exactly.
To make a formal
We will continue that peer pressure after a fashion. Ian Lennox, take care. We salute you.
Cheers.
Jones, Mickey DeLenz, Peter Tork, and Mike Nesmith, the Monkees collectively, and sometime in the morning, sometime now, it's just approaching 1 minute, 1 minute to 9 a.m. Run for the bus or whatever. You're listening to Siren Radio, Lincoln's first community radio station, bringing you the very best because frankly you deserve no less. In the studio we have Kira Olsbrook and Alex Bilton, who have been generally chilling out over the last hour, and in the next hour we'll be talking about the importance of flu jabs, the importance of fulfilling childhood ambitions with, of course, our tech expert, Jason Bradbury, who's now actually living in Lincolnshire these days. I know, amazing. From the Gadget Show to, of course, Don't Scare the Hare. What a series that was. We'll talk about that later. Any Don't Scare the Hare fans in here, Akira? Don't Scare the Hare?
Never heard of
Don't Scare the Hare.
I mean, that doesn't mean it's not good.
Of course, you know? Exactly. Although Jason, I think, is not necessarily holding it up as one of his finest achievements. We'll find out more about that in the next hour, as indeed we will with William Higham and Stephen Bowden about the whole notion of London suffering in the workplace. And Mark Parker will be be reporting in from France once again with updates and thoughts on the show, where we've been heading to, and he always provides some sort of sage import in terms of where we're going to, because that's the kind of person he is. So it's Siren Radio. We're approaching 9 o'clock. We'll have the weather after the news, which is coming up from the Sky News Centre, I would say, right now. FM. Siren 107.3.
Your flock is roaming far from the hill. Stars have faded, the sky is still. Angels are shouting glory and hallelujah.
We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground. We've been traveling.
40 days and nights of rain washed this land. Jesus said the money changers in this temple will not stand. Find your flock at them the higher ground. Flood waters rising in Canaan bound.
We've been traveling.
There will stray, will be called for our service come judgment day. For we cross that river wide, blood on our hands will come back on us twice.
We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground. We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground.
Yes, well, the season is there. Not so much the autumnal season, not necessarily the winter season, but certainly the season of flus. And indeed, more than that, it would seem that 1.2 million asthma sufferers are actually putting their lives at risk by not having the flu vaccine this winter. Now, to talk about this and indeed show some of the research that Asda Pharmacy have been involved with, we're delighted to welcome back to the programme that ace pharmacist, the wonderful Mac Din. How are you, Mac?
Good morning. I'm good.
That's all we like to hear. I mean, you'd have to be, really. I mean, it's the important thing. You're not going to go around saying, I'm down with the flu, etc. Listen, this survey, Mac, clearly we need to know how asthma sufferers are actually putting themselves at risk this winter through simply not having the flu jab.
Yeah, this is really interesting report that was pulled together by as the research team. And people don't realise that because they feel fit and they feel well in themselves, they don't believe that they require actually the vaccination to protect themselves against flu. But flu causes respiratory inflammation, so it can trigger the symptoms of asthma and make them worse as well. So the general wheezing and the chest tightness and shortness of breath. So it does really affect people with asthma if they do get flu. So it's always best to get the vaccination.
Especially when Asda Pharmacy are actually offering the vaccination free of charge with respect to the at-risk group. I mean, 110,000 asthma sufferers aren't getting the vaccine because they don't want to pay for it. Well, again, that takes that argument away from the issue, doesn't it, really, Mac?
It does. People don't realise that it's not only from a GP setting that you can actually get the vaccine from. You can actually get them from any community pharmacy within England. It's actually funded by the NHS. But the most important point is that it's accessible. For example, Asda's pharmacies are open late in the evenings on weekends, so there should be no excuse not to be able to get hold of the vaccine if you're working, because it just means that it's more convenient for patients out there now.
Now, clearly prevention is better than cure, as we've said, and it's interesting that the survey also suggests that instead of having the vaccine, 17% plan to minimise the risk of catching the virus by avoiding public places. Well, that might be a possibility, but so would be wearing a hazmat suit. It's not necessarily likely that you're going to be able to put that into practice all the time, is it?
No, this is correct. I think the best course of action is to get the flu vaccine, but not only you're protecting yourself, but you're also protecting people who may have underlying conditions as well. I think that's really important point to mention there. People who suffer from other conditions such as diabetes, heart disease, and even carers would need to be protected against the flu for this season.
Yeah, I was also interested to see that more than a third simply plan to be more hygiene conscious and follow measures such as using antibacterial hand gel. You should be doing that as a matter of course, surely. But never mind. In terms of tips and advice, what other suggestions would you have, Mac, in terms of people staying well this winter and minimising the risk of getting cold and flu? Is it simply a case of stocking up on the vitamin C, or is that a case of, no, you need more than that?
I think most importantly, you can start off with getting the flu vaccine. That's the first form of protection for you. Secondly, stay warm both inside and outside, because that can help prevent cold and flu. But like you said, you can't always be behind closed doors. So therefore, it's really important that if people who are suffering from colds and flu, then they should catch it, bin it and kill it. That's just general hygiene from spreading the virus to other people out there. But other important points to mention is around having your bedroom windows closed on a winter night, because breathing the cold air can be bad for your health and increases also risk of chest infections. But just trying to just keep generally active, just generally provide a strong immune system.
And in terms of the flu vaccine, can we assuage people about any side effects that might be there? And also, can you still catch the flu even if you've had the vaccine?
Catching flu from the flu vaccine is not possible, because the vaccine that is provided across all pharmacies and GP settings are usually the inactivated 4-strain vaccine. So it's not a live virus, so you can't catch the flu from having the vaccine. Now, some of the side effects you may possibly experience, and it's the most common ones that are actually reported by people, is just having a mild fever, slightly raised in temperature, achy muscles. sometimes soreness around the injection site where you've had the injection. But again, it only lasts for a couple of days. And just taking your normal paracetamol tablets can just help towards those symptoms.
And in terms of finding out further information, Mac, will you point them in the direction of the ASDA site, or is there another area that you'd suggest we should explore?
Just go to your ASDA.com and under your store locator, search for your local ASDA pharmacy.
Mac Dinn, a pharmacist extraordinaire, many thanks, and stay healthy, Mac.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, actually, I do think I should suggest next time Mac actually joins us that we could actually look to him setting up his own independent music band called Mac Dinn and the Vaccines. I think that would work quite nicely, really. Okay, flu vaccine. What are your thoughts, Alex? Are you a flu vaccine person who actually would say yes? I mean, I'm a student, obviously. I mean, so in such contact with toxic germs in the geography school, it's like a nightmare.
I mean, I've never actually had a flu vaccine before. Mm. I know my mum has. She's a GP, so obviously that she has to have that every year. But me and my dad never have.
All those sick people coming in trying to deal with the hospital system. Go away. I suggest to your mum she could wear a hazmat suit. Therefore, you know, constantly just go away. She cares. She helps people. That's the important thing. She's one of our heroes, which is fantastic. And Kira, flu vaccine in the family?
I've never had one either, but I just thought it was for the elderly that had.
Depends how you define elderly. You know, I mean, are you over 40, over 50, over 60,
or
in
60
Alex Bilton's case, you know, 85? It's very good. You know, he's looking very
good. 95 for Alex.
Do you think so?
To be honest, yeah.
It's that kind of level of maturity that I know we can look forward to when the breakfast show with Alex Bilton on Mondays will be starting in the near future. It's just in the planning stages, so don't tune in this Monday because it's too soon. You know, it's too soon. Yes. You'll get sort of Mr. Computer or doing their stuff, etc. But in the near future, probably November, I would have thought. There's a strong possibility. Again, you know, that it may be emerging like some sort of magic phoenix from the weekend ashes. Now, as we become more chronologically gifted, it may well be said that maybe our childhood dreams tend to be faded away. I don't know, maybe it's a case of with 28% of UK adults achieving their childhood ambitions, that means over two-thirds are still sort of looking at ways forward. And recent research by Microsoft has suggested that 55% of us aren't doing what we thought we will want to be doing when we were grown up. Then again, you know, it assumes we always ever do grow up. Who better to actually address this particular research than the awesomely talented, amazing individual with his own DeLorean to hand and all sorts of other magical routines, the Gadget Show's finest always. It's Jason Bradbury. How are you, Jason?
Oh, Well, wow, I'm flattered is what I am. Hashtag flattered.
Oh, very critical. And we've also got the fabulous Gillian from Microsoft. How are you, Gillian?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning.
Brilliant. OK. Gillian, we'll come to you first, actually. I mean, were you surprised initially by this research, or is it a case of, no, I always wanted to work for Microsoft, and that is my dream job?
So I do love the job that I do, but no, it wasn't necessarily always my dream to work for Microsoft. But I did have ambitions, and I think that's one of the nice things that this research is showing, is that of those people that have landed the jobs that they dreamed of as a child, actually 88% of them feel like they've fulfilled those childhood aspirations and are happy in their jobs.
Well, it's fair to say that whenever Jason Bradbury comes up to Lincoln for one of the founding events that are put together here, the inspiration, it's palpable, Jason, it's palpable that you sort of generate with students and staff and all sorts of things. But let's just talk about, in terms of the technology, etc., is that a critical part to this? Is it a case of we need to see tech as our friend?
I think we do, and you have very kind words. I really appreciate that. I thought chronologically gifted was a fantastic couplet, by the way. I've never heard that, those two words put so poetically together. But I do think, to answer your question, that technology does play a part in, you know, enabling us to kind of realise our dreams. I think it is clearly, it's easier, I think, Gillian, based on those statistics that you just touched on, if you have a sense of where you want to go. I think that does make life a little bit easier. I mean, I was clearly sort of destined to get into some form of, you know, communications. I mean, when I was younger, I was moving between wanting to be a comedian and wanting to be an actor. Although then I had this other side that was the tech kind of geek. In fact, you know what's funny? Based on the fact that I'm talking to Siren FM, it was my dad working in Louth. In Rugby, actually.
Oh, wow.
Rugby, for Rugby Plastics, who at the time were working with people like Sinclair Research. Mm. And he would bring home these, you know,
ZX-81.
The C5. I've actually got a C5 in the garage in memory of my dad.
Of course.
And, yeah, and so I was being exposed to this technology at a young age. So, yes, I did see the potential of tech, and I do think it is a great enabler in terms of, you know, the kinds of factors behind these statistics from this fascinating study.
It's interesting to see that it also, in terms of the persuasion or the persuasive nature of parents and grandparents, it also beats numeracy, literacy and communication skills in terms of actually really being key to future success. I mean, again, I suppose there is that notion of, are we reaching singularity, Jason? Well, ultimately, it's a case of just hand it over to the machine. We'll just sort ourselves out.
I think when the singularity is near, and that's me making a pun based on the famous book on that subject by Ray Kurzweil, my favourite futurologist, we'll know about it. So the singularity, for those listening that aren't quite as clued up, is, you know, it's basically the sort of tumultuous change that happens when our intelligence is matched by computers. And some people say that could come as soon as 2025. Mm. I personally feel that's quite a couple of decades too soon. But yeah, I think when we get to that sort of omnipotent moment, then maybe what we'll be trying to do, well, we will need to focus on some of the skills that make the people in this study so happy, namely, you know, creativity, those quintessential human skills like empathy. You know, rather than trying to compete with machines, which is effectively what we do now, that next period of our evolution, I think, could be wonderful. It'll be tricky getting there. I think we're gonna face some big questions as the jobs market changes. I mean, you can't fail to see it happening now, though, can you? When you go into a supermarket and you scan your own stuff, you know, you can feel the change happening. But ultimately, and maybe it's my nature, I'm an enthusiastic chap. You know, I'm thinking it's going to be great. And it's technology like the kind of stuff that we're talking about that's driven this study that's going to make it possible.
Gillian, from your own perspective, clearly Microsoft is cutting edge, not only of the survey, but more. Is that the way, as we head through the 21st century, that, you know, we need to acknowledge the fact that technology is our partner, it's going to work with us, in the same way as the telegraph back in the 19th century kind of completely revolutionised the way we actually communicate?
Yeah, excuse me. So one of the things that we really try and do at Microsoft is unleash and encourage people's ambitions and their creativity and encourage learning and provide different ways for people to express themselves. And part of that is around exploring how technology can empower us all to achieve more. So that's really how, you know, Microsoft technology and the new devices which we're launching today kind of come together, really.
And Jason, where would you suggest people should actually go to find out further details about this particular survey and more?
Well, I mean, Gillian is the expert on exactly where they should go, but if you put surface_UK into your Twitter, that'll take you to the right area. Facebook_SurfaceGo. I don't want to sort of do a political broadcast on behalf of the Microsoft Party, but hopefully that makes some sense. Gillian, we've also got some amazing stuff happening in London, and it's going to be happening for a while, so even those of us that live in Lincoln, and I don't know if you know, but I actually live in Lincoln now, because I'm not sure if you realise it, we've actually made the jump, but you can get down to London and experience some of the amazing technology that's driving this study at a brilliant experiential store right on in the heart of Oxford Circus.
Yeah, so right on Regent Street. So we've got some fantastic activity today being hosted by Chris Smith and Greg James, so the authors of Kid Normal children's books and Radio 1 DJs.
It's all happening.
The only dream I can actually say is as yet unfulfilled, Jason, is a combination between a guest lecture from yourself combined with a rerun of Don't Scare the Hare. Maybe put together within the actual university campus grounds, perhaps.
Do you know, I always cringe when people mention Don't Scare the Hare. It's funny that, because as you get older, you start to realise the kitsch, fun nature of things that you did at the time.
A classic,
felt really awful.
A classic.
Gillian, this is a children's game show that I did for the BBC, which really was a bit of a disaster.
I would say it was awesomely so.
Oh,
awesomely
I love you for that. I love you, and I don't even detect irony in your voice, so I'm going to take that.
I mean, you can take your Dick and Doms, you can put them to one side, Don't Scare the Hare. The end of the day was clearly the classic. It's all great stuff. Two final questions for you both. First of all, Gillian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I absolutely have. Thank you very much.
If the London thing is actually going, we should really actually do a location report there, so we must actually sort of address that. How long does the actual event take place, or how long will you be down in Regent Street?
Oh, we'll be down there till about 6:30 this evening.
The store's open... it's just open full time now, though, isn't
it? Yes, absolutely has. Yeah, it's been open now for a number of months, and we've got a lot of activity going on down there today. So, yeah, if you are in the area, or if not, then go and look at some of our Twitter feeds. So, surface_UK.
Fantastic. Well, we use chronologically gifted. I think we'll use experientially enhanced to actually close the whole thing. We don't use the O word, Jason, because I think experientially enhanced or chronologically gifted, they both work through the whole thing. I take it you'd both be able to return and join us in the not-too-distant future. Would you be kind enough to come back sometime and talk more about tech and magic?
Absolutely. Always. We'd love to.
Just do the smoke signal. I can probably see it from Drury Lane where I live.
There we are. It's amazing. It's truly tremendous. Jason Bradbury and Gillian, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Thank you.
So, tech. Let's turn to our studio co-hosts, Alex Bilton. How much do you use tech in your geography, Sarah? Is it something which you think you couldn't live without it? Because back in the day, people who did geography usually had patches on the elbows and usually corduroy jackets were there as teachers of geography. Yeah. You also were very known for your Ordnance Survey maps.
Yes.
And a propensity often to actually have a slightly nasally twang to say, oh, did you realise over that hill there? No, stereotypes, obviously, but how much do you rely on the GPS and the technology in geography?
Too much. I think now everything is online and everything is on a computer nowadays.
Because Kira's just said she really would have challenges if we actually gave her a map to read, so a Londonator's Ed would be hopeless, really, Kira.
Yeah, I mean, if you gave me a map to read, I'd probably get lost anyway. Which makes no logical sense. Yeah.
Is there a knack to reading map? Is it just a case of make sure you've actually got your grid references together?
Just try and find which way's north.
Yeah, but if you don't know? Like, even if you've got a compass, still don't know.
Then just walk.
Okay. Thanks for the advice.
And when do you stop walking? I mean, Kira, you take Kira on a field trip, for instance. You wouldn't want to necessarily give her the navigational duties.
No.
I mean, let's face it, we've got the food and gift fair coming up shortly at the showground. I mean, that could end up in, I don't know, Isleworth, possibly.
No, to be fair, though, I think last year, when we had time to go off and, have a little break, I think I did go the wrong way.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't find you again. Took me like 5 minutes to find you.
Like herding cats on a sort of route. It's amazing, but still, you got back in the end. That's the important thing. Up next, we will be talking about the amazing fact and rather worrying fact that 7 in 10 folk are relying on medication to manage workplace health issues. And we'll be speaking to William Higham, behavioural futurist and author of The Work Colleague of the Future, plus, of course, Stephen Bowden, ergonomist. And human factors consultant. All this and more on Siren Radio, where the time is approaching 27 minutes past 9 o'clock. That is the question. Once in a lifetime, Talking Heads, is it the same as it ever was? Well, with recent research suggesting that over a third of UK office workers spending between 7 and 9 hours a day sitting down at their desks, clearly there are factors that this is far too much time. 98% of UK workers are actually worried that this could lead to health problems in the future. Now, we're delighted to hopefully welcome to the studio now two fine folk to address this rather worrying series of developments. First of all, the author of the Work Colleague of the Future report and behavioural futurist extraordinaire, William Higham. Good morning, William. How are you? No, he's obviously not there at present. Have we actually got a connection from this point of view? William Higham, are you actually there? Ah, wonderful. He's being connected at this moment on a live sort of sequence, so hopefully the message is getting through. And we can now say, finally, not lost in the future, but back live with us now, behavioural futurist extraordinaire William Higham. Good morning. How are you? You see how he has his headphones put on from that point of view. And we could actually feel, we could go to another piece of music, we could actually talk about this particular work report, because we've also got ergonomist and human factors consultant Stephen Bowden with us. Stephen, are you indeed there?
Yes, I am, yes. Good morning.
Thank the Lord for that. That's good stuff there, Stephen. Obviously on the case from that point of view. Stephen, talk to us a little bit about the most common workplace health problems that are faced and look likely to basically be impacting office workers in particular, not just, I mean, we talk about this report in London, but it's presumably office workers across the country.
You are absolutely. The main issues is modern technology over the last sort of 10, 15 years has robbed us of normal everyday movement. So people that aren't getting up as much like our ancestors were, even going back to our grandparents, they needed to get up and down more than we do nowadays. So not just at work, but also at home. So it's long periods of inactivity, so sedentary postures, so sitting for extended periods, whether commuting to work, in the office. And the main risks are increasing the risk of a number of chronic diseases and musculoskeletal disorders that most people see nowadays. Lower back pain, shoulder and neck being the most common ones I see when working within office ergonomics.
So when we're looking with respect to that and avoiding repetitive strain injury, which has had lots of comments over the work from that point of view, what can you actually do to reduce it? Is it a case of taking more breaks? Is it a case of being aware of these issues? I mean, how can we actually cope with that?
A number of different things. One of the things you can look to do is set up your workstation to allow for what we call neutral postures. So movement's good, but movement when you're in awkward, non-neutral postures is where the injury starts to occur. So your body is designed to move from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. So we don't want to stop moving. If anything, we need to move more. But just making sure we have the correct office equipment, such as one of the most common things is monitor raises, having your monitor too low on the desk, which causes you to go into sort of a hunched, flexed posture for extended periods, and that can increase the risk of a slip disc, for example, if you stay in a fixed, flexed position for long periods of time. So it's just making sure you set up your workstation to allow for good, solid, neutral postures, and that will reduce the risk of repetitive strain injury.
Now, it strikes me that actually this can also apply to a whole range of activities, including students actually doing work at university, etc. So I'll bring in a couple of our students that we've got in the studio at present. Alex Bilton, do you spend a long time hunched over the desk dealing with reports and dealing with workstations and so on, or have you got your own posture scenario?
Since the start of second year, I've been sat at a desk most of the time writing essays, so I always try and set up so that I am set up straight as possible and can have the best posture as possible as well.
Stephen, presumably you'd echo that because it's fairly critical from that point of view. Kira, what about yourself? Do you get into good habits, bad habits?
Well, mine are all bad, to be fair. I mean, I have every time, if I sit, at my desk or my laptop or anything for, say, more than an hour to 2 hours, I get really bad lower back pain. And it does cause, I've had taken paracetamol for it and it doesn't seem to clear up and gone, I've tried to go to a doctor's, but I always wuss out at it.
So, I mean, clearly you see, could well be, I mean, you're taking medication for it from that point of view. I mean, what advice would you give someone like Kira, Stephen, who clearly is suffering even at this early stage in her academic career, let alone kind of work career?
Yeah, well, absolutely. As soon as we stop playing as a child, everything becomes more serious. We go to college, we go to university, everyone sitting for extended periods of time. So the first thing you need to do, NASA have actually looked at this from a research perspective, and they've come up with a sort of a minimum amount of movement you need every day. And it's about 33 to 36 times a day you need to go between sitting and standing. That will help reduce the risk of a number of chronic diseases. But also, that movement between sitting and standing will help reduce the load within the lower back. So you can have just simply standing up and sitting down again, at least, and around every sort of half an hour, 45 minutes, that takes your back away from that flexed position, and you go into more of an extended position when standing. That can reduce the loading within the lower back. And it's try to preempt discomfort. Don't stand up and move because you felt discomfort. You need to move before that. So a very good tip I would give you is don't have your glass of water on your desk. Simply put it away from your desk, and that will allow you to, that's the prompt to get up, to go and have a drink of water. But also there are lots of different devices you can have nowadays, cost-effective devices that can go on top of your desk to allow you to move between sitting and standing. That's part of the journey to adding more movement. But try not to ignore the symptoms. It's good that you've been to your doctor, but it's obviously quite a hard job for GPs nowadays to understand the context of the situation. So try to just move between sitting and standing as often as possible.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
So providing help from that point of view. And we've also sort of started off this whole thing by talking about the work colleague of the Future Report. Has William Heyer managed to arrive with us again? Is it just yourself, Stephen? I just wanted to clarify this because we don't have the all-seeing eye with us today.
No, it's just myself.
Just yourself.
I helped William with the ergonomics and human factors side of things.
That's fine. That's okay. No, I was just intrigued in terms of how we see that as far as the future is actually concerned, we might well be actually having an individual who'll be suffering from sore backs, strained eyes, headaches, and a whole range of things, and actually be developing a hunchback as well, which is not great in any way, shape, or form. So we'd like to avoid that. Stephen, where would you point people in terms of finding out further information about what we've been talking about today and so on?
Well, absolutely. So first of all, there's lots of information on the government website about health in general and what you can do, as well as fellows.com, fellows.co.uk have lots of information about good workplace ergonomics products that can help you adopt those neutral postures we discussed. But within the workplace, if you seek some advice from your HR manager, they should be able to point you in the right direction and provide you support to getting a workstation assessment at your desk to try and alleviate some of the topics we've discussed.
And Alex, any further questions or thoughts from yourself? Or is it a case of, no, I'm doing it right, I'm going to stay with that?
Yes.
Excellent. Stephen Bowden, ergonomist.
Ergonomist, yes,
exactly. It's not the easiest thing to actually say it at 9:30 at the moment. Ergonomist and human factors consultant. Many thanks. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. And keep sitting up straight. That's the important thing, Stephen, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. Moving between sitting and standing and sitting up straight.
Come on down off your cloud. Watch us be facing the crowd. You can remember that once upon a love affair. Your heart was warm, your lips were tender, and I didn't care, baby.
You're gonna see.
You're gonna see. My fill of fooling around. Ain't no life, just being a clown. I heard the weather report and it said sunny today. How did he know that you would show up to love me today, baby? We'll be right back.
it's all about the posture. Clearly, all about the posture. Stand up and sit down, and stand up and sit down, and so on. That's the important thing. Partridge Family there, and Brand New Me, and somebody who is always brand new because he provides sparkling insights into the way the Western world operates, even from his base in France, is Mark Parker. How are you, Mark?
Very well, thank you. How are you there in the studio?
Well, what can we say with respect to life, the universe, and everything else? Let's turn to Alex Bilton. Alex, your first ever Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How do you feel it's been going?
Yes, I feel like it's been going quite well, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Kira?
Yes, it's always good in the morning.
As you know, the cherry on top is clearly when Mark Parker comes back from France for his second time after a gap of 20 years. It's marvellous. We welcome your good self, Mark, to share with us what have you made of what you've heard of the programme so far, and are there any points you want to pick up and actually run with, or is it a case of, no, frankly, I just want to talk about Brexit and how Boris Johnson is serving the European Union so well these days?
I'm a bit.
Yeah, let's not go there. Yeah, let's stick with the former.
Yeah.
Okay, let's stick with the former. Okay.
The Trumpian dystopia worries me. Talking about the workplace, been very interesting listening to Jason and Gillian and your last guest. Mm. We've got Ken Loach releasing his film. His new film has come out in France this week called Sorry We Missed You.
Mm.
And we're hoping to go and see it next week.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that is all about the workplace and the gig economy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I haven't as yet, but obviously Ken Loach is a filmmaker who clearly is very much responsible for raising social issues and so on, and the I, Daniel number from a few years ago, I think, sort of echoed that whole scenario, in which, yeah, we might think that on the surface everything is wonderful, but there are a whole range of challenges and dystopian exercises that they're actually faced with, the likes of which, of course, Alex Bilton and Kira Osbrook will probably be faced with when they enter the world of work, if they haven't already entered the world of work. Because, I mean, Alex, do you have a job in addition to the work that you do as a geography undergraduate?
I mean, I had a summer job over at the NHS, as working as a receptionist in GP surgery.
It wasn't your mum's reception, was it?
It may have been, yes.
It's nice to see, Mark, that nepotism in the NHS continues to actually work hand in hand. That's marvellous. It's great stuff. And in fact, actually, I've got to ask you this question apropos of a little session I was having with my second year public relations students this week. Did you have difficulties with people not turning up for their appointments, actually making appointments and not turning up?
Yes, we had a lot.
Did you ever consider as a possibility getting them to actually write those down and then get them to read them back to you?
Well, what we do, we usually call them the day before just to confirm that they're going to turn up, and some of them say they are and then just don't the next day.
They tell you lies.
Yes.
They tell you untruths. What kind of society is this, Mark, where people actually don't tell the truth all the time? Sometimes I'm just shocked. I know you're based in France these days. You might say it's just an existential crisis we're going through. But, you know, honestly, it's still catching. I mean, that's almost as bad as saying that, you know, there were sort of course leaders and sort of heads of college in tertiary colleges up in the northeast who sometimes told untruths as well. I mean, it's never going to happen, is it, Mark? But still, let's not go there any further, because obviously legal aspects sort of take us into all sorts of other areas from there. But the fun things we could share. Kira, what about yourself? Work?
Well, I don't have a job at the moment because I focus more on doing my work experience and stuff. But I did used to work as a Saturday girl at hairdressers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing compared to Alex's experience with being a receptionist. It wasn't that, you know, successful. But it was different, you know. You have to deal with clients and stuff.
I mean, Mark, the situation in France, I mean, how's it sort of panning out? Because, you know, we hear all sorts of things, and clearly we get a very biased view in Britain about what's taking place in France, as I'm sure you might get a francophile appreciation of what's happening in the UK over there. How are things sort of panning out with gig economies and so on?
Right, well, there's an interesting court case in France at the moment.
Hmm.
Where we have France Telecom, which are now called Orange. You might have Orange in the UK as well.
We used to, yes. It's in fact, I still actually have a phone which does indeed have the Orange logo on. You see
wow,
that?
I know. That's an oldie.
Yeah, the jaws have just dropped on that basis. That's, and I use it for making and receiving telephone calls as well. It's amazing.
Where's the touch screen?
Where's the touch screen? Yeah, I know. I've just shocked a couple of second-year students there, and probably the same thing.
Should go into a museum.
It's been said about me for many a year. But let's move on. Yeah, so Orange, Mark. Sorry, we had a little diversion there. Yes.
There's a court case at the moment which reflects a great deal on the problems of the workplaces we've been talking about, because the dirigeants, the leaders of Orange, the managers, I should say, are actually on trial for 14 suicides.
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge in many ways, really, presumably caused by workplace stress.
We're talking about a whole culture of performance with new kind of management systems which are introduced into France from America and Britain, which all about personalized targets and inter-colleague competition. Mm.
The internal market, of course, which has had such success in both education and the health service in terms of really improving morale.
That gives you some sort of idea that France is not really any different from other workplace cultures. Mm. But even worse than that, of course, is Japan. And there's been many Japanese words which are sort of crept into the English language, such as karaoke. Mm. But there might be a new one called karoshi. Mm. Now, karoshi means death from overwork or death in the workplace. And it's become such a almost epidemic there that they have a name for it. And I was reading about this Miwa Sado, who's a 31-year-old journalist, who after putting in 159 hours of overtime in a single month, died from heart failure. Mm. And it's not just a one-off case. You know, we're talking here about a real... Perhaps epidemic's a bit strong, but a real problem of workplace suicide and death in Japan.
And on a very sort of serious line from that point of view, again, karoshi literally translated as you said, overwork death, occupational sudden mortality. These are issues of that. I mean, yeah, Kira, thoughts from your own point of view?
I think it's terrible. Employers should seriously up the game, or it should be implemented into the government somehow, or... You know, it's people shouldn't have to go to work to earn a wage and then die because of it, or die doing something that they love. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Alex, you're nodding in agreement there?
Yes, there's a very well-known phone maker company that I'm not going to say.
Yeah, sure, obviously.
But,
yes, yeah.
They're renowned for it, and I think I've heard somewhere that they build netting around their building because of stuff that happens in that country, which is a shame, really, that people...
How is it, Mark, that in the approaching the third decade of the 21st century, we have this insane scenario, which I'm sure that historians in centuries to come will look back and say, well, you know, in the Middle Ages they had the Black Death and the Spanish Inquisition, and they've had World War and Mass, and this sort of notion of... Because at the end of the day, it's not going to, you know, the classic cliched line, admittedly, that I don't think anybody ever said, well, maybe they did actually on their deathbed now, I wish I'd spent more time in the office. That's the reason you're in the situation you are, perhaps.
It's very easy to always blame the technology, that's the thing. I don't think we should blame the technology. It's simply a question of taking control of what we do. Mm. I don't want to go too far down that line because it's about taking control of the work that we do so we can actually become creative people again, enjoy what we do and get rewarded properly for what we do. Mm. And because work is what we spend our lives doing. And until we control our working lives, we can never really control our lives full stop.
Mm. Yes.
Kira, anything you'd like to add? Shocked.
Yeah, I am. I don't.
And Alex?
I think another point to draw in is important, especially for healthcare professionals, because they're always checking on us to make sure we're okay. Exactly. It's very important to always check in on them and make sure they're okay.
Very true. So we're agreed on that basis. So, Mark, how is this going to be implemented? Is it a case of you need legislation? Do you actually need to work through that process? Is that going to be another sort of stressful side of things, etc.? I mean, what is the French solution to this? Or is it just a case of, you English, you just have these, etc., and so on?
Well, I think we do need a revolution in the workplace, quite honestly. Mm. And it does mean, going back to Gillian, I mean, she enjoys working for Microsoft, that's great, but it is one of these massive monopolies. Mm-hmm. And really, we need public control and democracy in the workplace. We need to have democracy, not just in a political sense, but also in an economic sense, so we can control our lives, we can have a say in what we do, what we create. And also, it puts us back in touch with nature, because if we control the materials that we use and what we produce, then we become more conscious of the fact we're actually in touch with nature, because we are controlling the materials that we deal with.
And, of course, your upcoming book deals with that issue, plus a range of other bits and pieces as well. Mark, I'm going to ask you this. Do you blog? Do you have a blog site that people can actually find
details on? I'm going to work on one quite soon, now that I'm well into my book. So I will be doing that, yes.
Excellent. Yes. This is good. So, obviously, we can share other lines from that point of view. Kira, any questions you'd like to put to Mark about life and times, whereabouts in France is based, or anything else, really?
I have a weird one. Mark, have you? What is your favourite French dish? I've just always wondered too.
His wife, Christelle, obviously.
that's a tricky one. We've recently gone vegetarian, or my partner's been vegetarian now for a couple of years, and it means that we've all gone sort of vegetarian or flexitarian, if you like. Mm. So we have all these big redundant French cookbooks that we don't use any longer, because the French eat an awful lot of meat, raw meat almost, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. So that's a difficult question. But what I used to enjoy,
let's focus on the future.
Escargot.
Exactly.
The area where I live is quite famous for snails, and their recipe for snails I did really enjoy a lot. Mm. It was with a pork. Mm. It was cooked with pork as well, but it was snails and pork. That was very, very nice.
Porky snails.
Yeah.
Lines of things there. And Alex, any questions you'd like to put to the closing views for Mark down in France somewhere?
Where are you based then?
Right, it's about an hour and a half north of Bordeaux. That's put you on the map, I hope.
Well, he's a geography undergraduate, that's why hopefully we're
trying to picture it.
We've got this line there.
But if you know the region a little better, then our nearest big town is Angoulême, which is famous for bande dessinée, which is graphic art. It has one of the world's biggest bande dessinée festivals every January, which is a festival of comic strip, if you like.
Well, listen, this 2020, clearly, whatever happens with respect to negotiations in Brussels or Europe and Parliament and all the rest of its pieces, I think we need to put you on the case of being a location reporter for that little festival. Kira, have you managed to locate that via your mobile device?
It looks very beautiful, to be honest, if I've got the right spot. I mean, that is. But it looks very coastal. And
Is it coastal? Are we talking about that? Or
well, in the sense of there's a beach.
Right.
There's a beach. Great description.
Yeah, you've got a beach and a promenade.
It reminds me a little bit of Cromer.
Yeah.
Over here, it does. It reminds me of
Cromer, right. Okay.
Probably completely different.
We're actually about an hour from the coast.
Yeah.
See, so I was...
You're very right, exactly. Yeah. And we can now actually identify Mark as a correspondent from France, living somewhere just like Cromer, which is great. You know,
it's a nice spa.
He had that whole thing.
One quick note on the rugby. Yes? It's going to be a Wales-England final.
Really? Whoa. Yeah. He wasn't messing about there. I mean, Ian Lennox was vacillating. I still think New Zealand will be probably very difficult to overcome, but you're going to go for that Wales-England match. Yeah, extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, there we have it. And, Alex, it's time now for you to deliver, for the second time, the last two questions to Mark Parker.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Delightful, yeah. Superb.
Brilliant. And will you be joining us in the near future?
I really hope so, yes.
Exactly. Fantastic.
In November, or Novembre. Very confusing. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar at the start of the programme. Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, with his views on the ITV Royal interview and, of course, the King and Official Secrets. Ian Lennox, Mac Dinn, Jason Bradbury, and William. Not William, Ryan. William wasn't there. Stephen Burden was there. And, of course, Mark Parker and your good self, dear listener. Plus, of course, Kira Allsbrook. Back on Wednesday, Kira?
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. And Alex Bilton back next week. Alex, are you taking time out? Oh, no, of course you don't, because geography doesn't have a reading week, so
no,
no, exactly. So we'll see
you
next week.
Oh,
exactly. It's the way for it was, Kira. I can identify that from that point of view. Okay. I think we'll, in deference to France, shall we wrap up with au revoir? Because after all, they need it after their rugby disaster.
Oh, we.
Or did they? I want two, three. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
You can say au revoir as well, Mark. We'll just wait. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, one more time. Au revoir. One, two, three.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
He did. He got there in the end. That's the important thing.
But that was always the most difficult part. See, I'm in love with how your soul's a mix of chaos and art, and how you never try to keep them apart. I wrote some words and then I stared at my feet. Became a coward when I needed to speak. I guess love took on a different kind of meaning for me. So when I go, just know it kills me to leave. To all the stars that light the road, don't ever leave that girl so cold. Never let me down, just lead me home. Don't tell me this is all for nothing. I can only tell you what.